following is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. The World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO. And, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall.
Episode 27 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Jason Bryant here with you again today, joined with John McGovern, head coach of the University of Dubuque, and our special guest today, two-time Olympic medalist and 1972 Olympic champion Ben Peterson. He's got a new book out called Road to Gold. We'll talk a little bit about that book, but before we get going, Ben, you grew up in an era where, you know, wrestling was around. It was not as organized as we are today, but you found ways, you and your brother, to not just go in different routes to make Olympic teams and win medals. But, you know, your story has become, one of legend when it comes to people, not necessarily my generation, but that's what we want to talk about today is bridging the gap between those who grew up watching you and now those who have to hear you tell stories and why you speak so well. But first of all, Mr. Peterson, welcome to the program. We look forward to hearing what you have to say today.
Thank you. My privilege.
So let's just start going right back to the very beginning and you and John getting your start in wrestling in Wisconsin. You know, what was that journey like in discovering the sport?
Well, we started wrestling because our older brothers had done it before us. They were out of high school by the time we got there. There was no elementary programs. And to be honest with you, when my older brother first wanted to wrestle, my mother vowed that no son of hers would ever be involved in wrestling. And all five of us ended up wrestling before it was done. She had to learn that it wasn't the phony vulgarity of pro wrestling. And once she understood that, she was behind it. But Dad patiently took time to figure out what it was all about and then educated us and educated Mom about it.
How quickly did you and John start seeing success when you guys first started?
Well, as John did not start his freshman year. He's a year older than me, and so he would have started as a sophomore because of a football injury his freshman year. And so that year, initially I couldn't even make the JV. I couldn't beat John, and I was at his weight class. I kept waiting for him to make varsity. And then we ended up getting different weight classes, and I got started growing and was bigger than him. And by the end of the season, I was able to wrestle seven times for the varsity, but lost every one of them by a fall. So John had a few matches that year that would have maybe said, hey, this guy's figuring this game out. But it was pretty meager beginnings at that point. The next year, we got a new coach, and Jack Walsh came from the Chicago area and was very very skilled, very knowledgeable about wrestling, and he really was invaluable over the next 2 years for John and three for me. By the time we were done with our high school years, we had gotten some good confidence and also good interest and love for the sport. So it became easier to work at getting in shape and sharpening our skills in it.
What was it that made you love the sport? I mean, you talked about the coach coming in and give you a different mindset and a different technical approach, but What was it about wrestling that was the draw, and what was it that made you stick with it? And you know what? I really love this. Even after the, you know, we see so many kids today, if they have a bad season, they're going to quit the sport, and they have a bad taste in their mouth about it, and they never come back, and we never see them again as wrestling fans.
Well, I think there's more than one factor that comes to play. I'll give you a couple of them. One is there was support and interest from other people around us. Even when I lost all those 7 matches, I remember people just being positive and encouraging me and saying, "Hey, this, you can do well as time goes on, Ben. Don't get discouraged." So if somebody's going to really enjoy the sport of wrestling, it always helps if other people around are encouraging them when things aren't going so well. So as a young wrestler starts developing, if he's got good support from people around him, and he can learn to really enjoy, even to the point of saying he likes or loves the sport, but he's not necessarily winning. I think that was a factor for John and I early on. But then we start getting serious about it. And the second thing I'd say, if you're going to enjoy something, you got to know it and understand it. And so we started studying it ourselves with each other, and then our coach being knowledgeable, we began to understand the mechanics of the game and just saying, this is enjoyable and we can learn more about it. And it was like playing a chess game that just kept getting more and more intense and varied, and that was interesting to us. So when our older brother came home from college football and said he needed to make a weight room and lift weights, and we're just starting high school at the time initially, that was fun to do that work, but we really needed to enjoy it and be able to identify that, hey, this lifting is going to help. I always say, tell people, I never got to the point of liking to lift weights, but I liked when they raised my hand at the end of a wrestling match. And I could definitely identify that the work was helping. So when those kinds of things all get together, you start enjoying it. But encouragement, the knowledge of the sport, and then doing the work and seeing the benefits really starts to put a smile on the face. I tell kids today, I love the sport yet, and I'd be watching them develop and go through as they go through their learning process, they're growing and maturing as a young man. And that's always fun to watch.
As we talk about you moving into college, and of course, you went to Iowa State. Your brother John went to University of Wisconsin at Stout. And it's one thing that people look at it nowadays. They expect brothers to go to the same place. First of all, you know, why was John headed to Stout, and why did you ultimately go to Iowa State?
Well, when John finished high school, he initially was really he failed to qualify for the state tournament his senior year, and the spring of that year he really wondered if he would ever play sports again, and he decided to go to Stout because of the degree they had in industrial education. He was looking at pursuing that at that point, and so it was a good place for him to go. And when he got down there, he just said, "Well, okay, I'll check out the wrestling and see if I can pursue it." He really did not train or think serious about it in the off season that he had before his junior and senior year in high school. He trained during the summer and very little of it that year. I qualified for the state tournament that year by the skin of my teeth. I got beat pinned twice, but I came home with a vision, I guess you'd say, but just a goal that I could see it, that it was possible for me to win that state championship the next year. So I worked very intently on that all year. I failed. I made it to the finals and got pinned in the finals, and But my coach told me to go to the Olympic trials. Crazy for a senior in high school to go to the Olympic trials, but it was a regional. Nobody in my weight class had ever wrestled freestyle before. We were all high school kids. Wasn't the same in the other weight classes, but it wasn't mine. And the next thing, I'm going to the Olympic trials, which were at Iowa State. And I was still looking for a place to wrestle. I was hoping maybe I'd get a scholarship or a partial someplace. And when I didn't win the state tournament, that was kind of dampened whether that could happen. And when Coach Nichols saw me at the Olympic trials, he called me up 2 weeks later. And I was more than happy to join the Cyclone wrestling team at that point. So it was just kind of the way John and I were developing at the time, and why we didn't go to the same school. I considered going to Stout, and I could have potentially done that had I not had some doors open when I went to the Olympic trials.
Let's talk about the book, Road to Gold, which you can get, those listening, at campofchamps.org. And what made you want to sit down and chronicle your, as the book is titled, Road to Gold?
Well, it really was a process and a thinking of several years. Initially, I guess I've become a storyteller. When I do camps and wrestling events, whether I'm speaking at a clinic or an awards banquet or a school assembly, I tell stories about John and I and just how we progressed. And I began to find that people enjoyed hearing those stories, and they were motivated and encouraged by them, and whether they were young kids or adults. Some of the older adults now, particularly, they remember and watching John and I wrestle. And slowly the comments were made to us, boy, you should put that in writing. And the stories ought to be, you should write a book about it. And I had people tell me that. And I never thought of myself as a writer, but Mike Chapman, when he started the Wind magazine, I'm not sure how long he'd had it, but he asked me if I wouldn't just write the column in there every issue. And I told him, and I would do that, the next thing I began to develop the confidence that I could actually write a book. It was because of all those articles that really I got to a place being able to say, hey, let's collect these things. Some of them have been published in the national wrestling magazines, and others they've never been in print before. I asked Mike Chapman, I think maybe one or two other guys too, just try to get somebody else to write this thing for me, and I finally realized they couldn't. They had too many things going on themselves. So I just got serious about it and started writing it myself. And I tell people it took me 9 years to write it, 1 year to correct it, and 10 days for them to print it. It's quite a process.
Going to switch it over to Coach McGovern here. You've spent time with Ben and have him involved with your program on various levels. What is it about Ben's storytelling ability that you see the value with your kids?
Well, it's authentic, and they can relate to him. And he's just a great accountability partner. And he actually shared time with training, obviously, with Gable for the Olympic run, and he talked to it a little bit about how you want to have iron sharp and iron kind of training accountability partner. And when Gable had lost to Larry Owens, he was kind of getting off the end a little bit. He talked about an incident where he was out late, and you guys usually ran in the morning, and he ran across you running. He said he wouldn't miss another run with you, and he lived with him, and he keeps our coaches and our athletes accountable. And, even now when I read the Bible in the morning, I think about Ben. He says he starts his day reading the Bible. I try to get an edge and sometimes read at night. But he really keeps you grounded mentally, physically, spiritually, and he puts you around an environment. And our guys know he's going to be real present with two ears when they're talking, and he's going to give them good, sound advice, some of the best advice you could find. And that's, I think, why Coach Gable asked him and his brother to live with him and his mom, and he has some good stories on that too, and I don't know if they're all in the book, but anytime you're an Olympic gold medalist, there's going to be a lot of lessons about how to overcome things and achieve your goals, and it's great for our guys to hear that.
Yeah, Ben, one thing I want to touch on, obviously the 72 year with a dynamic team. Obviously, there was you, there's Gable, your brother, guys like Chris Taylor, there was personalities on this team, and you also had the backdrop of Munich and the tragedy that happened there. How much did that experience in Munich, not just with the gold medal, but with the tragedy that occurred, really shaped your worldview on things and maybe made its way into the book?
I tell people, I'm sorry, there's a chapter about this, of the extremes of the Munich Olympics. And they were the extremes for me. In fact, I tell people that whenever I bring up the Munich Olympics, I bring very positive things in the thoughts and memories of people who were around it all then. And then I bring very negative ones. And the positive, of course, was the wrestling success of several of us, much better than we'd had for a long time. And really, it was the most successful team to that point. And so whenever any wrestlers understood, knew that, why, they would be excited about talking about Taylor and Gable and John and Wayne Wells and Rick Sanders and myself, all of the six of us getting those medals. And then they'd ask about Mark Spitz and getting his seven. And then they'd asked, about the Russian or Soviet basketball team that beats the American basketball team for the first time ever after they played the last 15 seconds three times. And just the rivalry, but the trouble over that kind of thing was really discouraging to people, how that all happened. But then the worst one, of course, is the terrorist situation. John and I have always said that the international terrorism began at that point. Terrorism has been going on since Cain killed Abel. But not on a worldwide scale like that happened there. And that really changed so many things. Montreal was a different setting because of it. But I put those things in the book, and I could have written a lot more, but there's several things that people have thanked me for explaining. I've always been thankful that we were done wrestling when that terrorist thing happened, because it was really most unfortunate for the athletes that competed after us.
Yeah, on Tuesday, I was at the Full Circle documentary premiere. It was a documentary on Jay Robinson and his camp system, and part of that was he was on the Greco team, and he was supposed to compete that day. They moved the competition. They delayed the games for a day, and then he was going out there against guys that now had 2 days to recover, and he was one of the smaller guys in the weight, and he talked about how that disrupted the Greco-Roman performance. But I want to circle back to the freestyle team and another tragedy, at least for the sport of wrestling, is shortly thereafter, the sport of wrestling lost Rick Sanders. And this was 7 years before I was even born. And I've only heard a few stories about Rick Sanders. We know his, basically the lore that surrounds him, with him being kind of a free spirit. But, what were some memories you had of Rick and his kind of, he marched to the beat of a different drum, as the stories go. And compare and contrast your two styles and how you guys live life, but were so both very good at the sport of wrestling.
I began to hear about Rick Sanders from Gable while I was still in college, or well before I met him. And Gable was using, just learned various tactics from him. And I remember once Gable says, we're going to run down the street like Sanders. I go, okay, so what's this guy, what does he do, run down the street? Well, we run down the street with 1 foot on the curb and 1 in the gutter. And then when we got one leg kind of getting a little worn out from doing that, then we go to the other side of the street and go on the other curb so the other leg could be up every time. And we would run that way and say, what are we doing this for? I just got to be, got to know how to be varied and different. And well, Rick Sanders is a master at his variety of techniques and positions that he had just mastered. And there were times in the camp that I had some people tell me that, you know, since they said, oh, you guys argued, you and Rick argued. And there were times that I asked Rick not to bring some things to practice and to just leave that away. And I saw some things that were not helpful to the team. But the ones that I got accused of breaking his radio. I did not break his radio. I turned it down, but I did not break it. and I actually knocked it over accidentally. I didn't do it on purpose. He was laughing the whole time while it was happening. We were running in circles, warming up, and put the music on just playing way too loud. And so every time I went around, I turned it down. Well, he goes around and he turns it back up. So then I come around and turn it back down. And while I was doing that, I knocked it over once. So, of course, the story goes out that Peterson kicked the radio and busted it. No, that's not true. And we laughed and kidded about it afterwards. So, but, I've always complimented Coach Bill Alfaro and just the way he brought all of us together. We were different, and it was the hippie movement setting that you do whatever you want, being proclaimed to everybody. And the thing that disappointed me is I saw people use that excuse to break training rules and do things that were not helping them as a wrestler, as a man. And I was not going to get involved in doing that myself, and I encouraged others to avoid those drinking and other things that guys I saw make excuses. I saw my Iowa State teammates get in trouble and use that excuse. So, well, free country, we do whatever we want. Well, you know, the consequences of what we do. So I had some discussions with Rick Sanders over that issue a couple of times. And he was a lot of fun, just a ton of energy, and a very likable kind of a guy. And he was a lot older than me, and one of the senior guys on the team, age-wise. And so I respected him and knew I could learn a ton from him.
You'd mentioned Bill Farrell, and he passed a few years ago, and now the New York AC tournament named in his honor. And when you research Bill Farrell, you realize he discovered the sport of wrestling late. And to see a guy like that with didn't have the experience coming up that a lot of people did, and didn't discover it until he was you know beyond when people start wrestling. What made him such a good coach and a good leader of that 72 team?
Well, every once in a while, he would remind me through the years. He says, Ben, you're a Packer fan. You know, I was the first weightlifting coach that Vince Lombardi ever hired. And Coach Farrell had some really diverse experiences in wrestling, in football, and in business. And so when he came to coaching the team in 1972, he wasn't just coming as a technician. He was coming and overseeing the business of developing and preparing an Olympic team. And I think he really brought some very unique elements to the just preparing us. And it was very obvious. Our teams had gotten 3 medals in the 2 previous Olympics combined. It's 40 wrestlers with 3 medals. And he hated that. He wanted to change that. And he got a, say, in a sense, an army of other men that helped him and complimented places where he was inexperienced and not knowledgeable. I remember him teaching techniques, and they were definitely freestyle oriented, and they were simple and in some ways maybe even profound. And then he, other details he left to the other coaches. And I saw him doing that. He had a really a team of coaches that were very diverse that took care of us. And that's why I compliment him. Always enjoyed talking to him afterwards. I would not have a gold medal today if it was not for his knowledge on the international shenanigans that were going on between the Cold War countries and the Soviet bloc and the free countries. And he knew how they would throw matches, and they were ready to do it. And they were taking away the chance of me getting a gold medal. And I've always respected that, because most coaches would not have understood or had the savvy to do what he did.
Also part of that 72 team, we've mentioned Coach Gable throughout the course of this interview, but what was your first experience like with Coach Gable? You know, you get there to Ames, and he's part of the 72 team with you, and how has that relationship just been consistent over the years?
Well, first of all, when I saw Dan try out for the 68 Olympics, and I saw him get beat. And then I get in the wrestling room a few months later, and everybody's talking about the Gable guy. And I said, okay, which one is he? And I hadn't fully, he's not in his uniform anymore. He doesn't look the same. I said, which one is he in here? And I remember the first time he was sitting under a tarp, leaning, sitting against the wall after he'd been working hard and he'd been sweating good. And one of my classmates, I suppose another freshman, said, I've seen him go over there. And I said, oh man, he's just a rookie. He didn't look very big at all. He didn't look very impressive. I don't know how long it was. It wasn't more than a month that we'd been in the room that he came to me and asked us work out, and I knew it was going to come sooner or later because he was going with all the other big guys, and I'm 30, 40 pounds heavier than him at the time. I later would get up to 50 pounds heavier than him, and we would work over and over and over again. It took me 4 years to say I beat Dan Gable. It was a month before the Olympics, and I got my own gold medal, and say I beat Gable in a practice match. he and I both remember it, he was the master. He was the captain of the team initially, and so by the time I got to be a senior and John joins us, he's a grad assistant, so he's an assistant coach, and yet we're working with him constantly. So it was quite a combination relationship that developed at that point. And then when he invited John and I to stay at his house for a whole month, where his mom and dad just provided for everything we needed to train, it was like at times I wanted to pinch myself to see if I was really alive in the beginning, if this was a dream. But through the next 4 years, particularly training through 76, he kept telling me that I should come to Iowa, where he was now coaching. He said, Ben, you need to be over here. And he was right. I tried to create the kind of atmosphere that he had in other places, and I could not do it, not like he did. And I've respected Dan for years over what he did and the opportunities he gave John and I. So Dan said this to me. I sent him a copy of the book early, And he says, Ben, that book's going to make me famous. And I says, well, yeah, you're right. I write a lot about you because I was privileged to cross paths with you. And so, yes, I'm going to write stories about you. Most of them are positive. A couple of them there's one chapter I asked him to completely give me an approval to write, to publish. I wrote it and sent it to him. So if it was stated properly, and he said yes. So our friendship it's been most enjoyable through the years.
You talk about positives and negative stories within the book. How many of these books and the stories that you tell within the book have a lesson that is taught? And how much of these lessons, with your Camp of Champs and your speaking engagements, how much of those shine through in Road to Gold?
Well, there's 39 chapters. And I think probably almost every one has at least one main lesson that I talk about. And many chapters have several in them. But at one point I go through and just list the wrestlers who were in that room that ended up being national champions, most of them two-time national champions. And what I learned from each of those guys. And it's like this, you need to learn things from a lot of different perspectives, a lot of different people, because in wrestling, you're going to be attacked and compete against such diversity. So I was learning lessons from every one of those guys, and I explained that, what I gained from each one of them. And when I'm coaching and talking to kids, I bring out many of those I've done through the years. And so I guess I could say there's dozens of principles in the book that will help young wrestlers and older alike. I go to the Olympic trials, and I'm thinking about the guys now preparing for this summer in the Olympics, and I think, well, one thing after another in that book would help them. And so I wish every Olympian this summer would read this book before they go. I think they could be helped by it.
Coach McGovern, going to shift it over to you here and talk about Ben's influence in Division III, where you're an active coach. And when you look at the landscape of Division III, we've got Joe Rouse still trying to fight for an Olympic berth to qualify the weight class, but he was a Division III champion at Elmhurst and has been on a world team, won the Olympic trials. And when you see a guy like Ben Peterson come into the coaching ranks in Division III and be so active within the coaches and the programs, what's it mean to have a guy like this involved in a non-scholarship situation in an area of the sport where these kids are wrestling because they just simply love the sport of wrestling?
Well, I think it says a lot about Ben Peterson and who he is and why he's in the sport and transforming men's lives. When he took the job at Maranatha Baptist and Division III program, it talks about his parents not necessarily thinking that was the best fit from a business standpoint, but he was in the business of transforming men's lives, and that's why he's in our program. I mean, he goes beyond wrestling skill sets, and these guys, they respect him, and he talks about things that you wouldn't normally think you'd hear from a man with an Olympic gold medal, but just little things for a freshman like being homesick and crying and missing your parents, that was him. But he said that's a good thing. It's a good season in your life, and you have to go through those things. And so he works with youth wrestlers all levels and cares about their lives spiritually beyond their performance and their identity. And coaches know that, and I think that embodies a lot of what Division III is about. And he's mentored some of the guys too, like Jim Grunewald at Wheaton, and he said a team prayer before the duels with Wheaton and us and North Central, and we wrestled North Central, Wheaton heated duels, and then he spoke to North Central's team, and grew them spiritually, even though he was with us. And then our seniors and their team kind of did a little prayer together. And I think he embodies a lot of what's good about humanity beyond the sport of wrestling. And then obviously the best, the wrestling is just a great platform.
So Ben, I guess the obvious question here, it's kind of a loaded question. What do you get out of this when you get to be able to tell stories to like as John just described, you know, the North Centrals, the Wheatons, the Dubukes of the world, the wrestling programs that are often overlooked by the greater wrestling community outside of Division III?
Well, I appreciate those comments from my Coach McGovern, but people tell me, and I totally agree, that there seems to be two passions that come through in my public life. I'd say there's a third one, would be my family, but my wrestling and my faith in Christ, I speak of often, and I just so appreciate being able to do that in various ways to put wrestling and encouraging people with the value of God's word and the truth of salvation provided in Christ. Those are precious things to me personally. And then to think that a bunch of wrestlers would be interested in it, just that excites me. For me to be able to put those two together, as Coach said, I did that at a small Bible college here for 28 years. And the number of athletes was smaller than what I had, you know, at Iowa State. But the passion that those guys had for just enjoying the sport, it was fun. I go see those guys even often today. I'll visit various ones of them, and they talk about wrestling as if they were wrestling at an NCAA level school. They enjoyed it and trained that intently in it. So I had a ton of fun when I came here. I have, two thoughts in the book. I've been telling people that I wanted to exemplify and encourage living life with purpose and intensity, not just getting by, not just floating through. I think an awful lot of our young youth in every generation has to be encouraged and given dreams and hopes. The story of John and I encourages people to live with purpose and intensity. And the other thing is that I wanted to just very simply encourage faith in Christ. It's a wrestling book, but I have included the testimony of John and I simply in the book and how our faith in Christ grew and how it encouraged us as wrestlers, helped us as wrestlers. And I'd want that to be the case for every person that reads it as well, that they'd be encouraged in that element as well. So I seek to do that wherever I go. And Coach McGovern has given me the opportunity to walk in their wrestling room and get incredible respect by those athletes. Every time I come there is rewarding to me, obviously.
When you talk about the Peterson brothers, you say Ben, you also say John. When you look at your Olympic credentials, you've got the gold in 72, a silver in 76, whereas your brother John with the opposite, with the silver in 72, then the gold in 76. When you've reached the highest point in wrestling and then you're back there with another opportunity to reach it and you don't reach it, but then you see your brother who was just so close the last time and you see him reach it. How are those emotions? I mean, it's bittersweet that you don't win the gold, but you got to have that elation when your brother wins. Explain what Montreal was like in 76 when that scenario unfolded.
Yeah. And it's a good question. And you really, in a sense, I think, you hit the nail on the head yourself. I wanted to win. John wanted me to win. We pursued the thought very definitely that we both could be gold medalists. And John had talked about that for 4 years. I don't think he ever lost sight of the thought that we were still young enough we could do this again. I did. I injured my knee in the World Championships in 1973, so a year after I got my gold medal. And I didn't wrestle for a year and a half. The whole time, John just kept telling me, Ben, you get that knee rehabilitated, you can be back wrestling again, we can both win. And so it was a strong thought the two of us had that we should both be able to win. I think my dad says it to probably, he said this to John afterwards. He didn't to me. John told me that. He says, you know, John, I wanted both of you guys to win. But if you couldn't both win, it's good that you won, because now you guys can't argue over who's better. And Dad kind of just put it, I think, in proper places. I almost felt like this. In 72, in fact, I struggled a little bit. Should I call this Road to Gold? Because John didn't get the gold that year. And this story is only about going to Munich. And but it was like the gold medal was both of ours. It was like we had pursued this together, and with Gable and the team and everything, and we went home, and the Petersons had a gold medal. And so 4 years later, the Petersons had another gold medal. And it wasn't just that it was John's. I was rejoicing with him. And all the frustrations, the sickness, the injury he'd gone through in the previous year, the disappointments in his wrestling between 72 and 76 that would have caused most people to quit. And it was very rewarding. You'll see the pictures of me. I'm straining not to cry, or maybe I am crying. It's because of my loss. It's not because of John Wyndham. I was all smiles when I got over my few minutes of loss, and then said, hey, John won this thing. And he won it, so just running away with it. High school kids can't qualify for a state tournament, and yet John never qualifies for a state tournament, and yet he wins the Olympics, closest match, 14-7. Don't shortchange yourself.
Well, just, you know, we talked a little bit about Bill Farrell. Would you kind of touch, Ben, on who your training partners were and just kind of a little bit on the preparations, final stages as you got ready for the Olympics?
Okay. Well, I have to say that you saw the final stages that summer. We knew we had to do major improvement if we were going to compete. Our condition, our technique, everything had to improve. And I think Gable's dad understood that our condition needed to improve, and he and Dan had a fight over that. It made me very uneasy. I would even suggest to John we needed to leave. We were overextending our welcome. But Matt Gable just wanted us to train an extra time where we just split a gap in our condition. That was so important for me. I could never have lasted, and particularly the Soviet match, without that conditioning. And so John and Gable and I training through that summer was just incredible. When we got to the training camp and being able to train with, I should also say I trained with Chris Taylor during this year. I had them 2 weeks or 2 months off in the summer. We should have had Taylor with us, and we could have gotten him at a gold medal level too, but I trained with him again the last month and a half when we got to the training camp. And it may seem funny, I'm half his size, but I could not have won the Olympics without the confidence that I got with Taylor. And I don't think I could have beat him in a match, but if you give me 20 minutes, I'll wear him out, I'll stay out of trouble, I'll take him down, I'll turn him, I'll pin him. And to be able to do that was just huge to me. But then, all the other the younger guys, I wish I'd had Russ Hallickson. He and I should have trained together, but Russ got injured, and he was injured when I wrestled him for the final match. But then, so he couldn't even stay to train during the training camp. I missed that. That would have been valuable for me to train with him. I was still going with John almost every day or every other day. Probably one day I'd go with Gable, the next day I'd go with John all the way through the training camp. And then mix other people in, coaches. I say this, the coaches themselves, Bill Farrell, Bill Wick, and Jim Peckham, those three men went at John and I ruthlessly on down and wrestling. And they were invaluable to us because that was so foreign to me, coming out of college wrestling. I wrestled some with Hank Shank. He was a 220 pounder. He was so long and gangly, and he didn't vary his wrestling a lot. And so I didn't wrestle a lot with him. But diversity. You're going with those guys when you get to the training camp, and you want to go with the guys that just come with a different style. And so I did that with several other men there, too.
Been talking with Ben Peterson here and his new book, Road to Gold. You can get it at campofchamps.org. Sells for $16. There's also some bulk shipping that you can check out again at campofchamps.org. And I'd like to thank Mr. Peterson for coming on the program, talking about his journey and writing the book and his journey to and that road to gold in 72, and then sharing in his brother's story in that run to gold in Montreal 1976. So, Mr. Peterson, I'd like to thank you for your time today, and it's been very insightful and educational.
Well, thank you. And I just encourage coaches, make it a required reading for your wrestlers. I'll assure you they will be encouraged in their training and need the things they need to do, and just be encouraged as young men and doing what's right and finding results from it, finding good results from it. So, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about obviously something that I enjoy and have thought an awful lot about.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.